All right, Euro, give it to me. You and Pistol. Guitars in here for you. One, two, three, four. All right. And then we'll bring a little Johnny Griffin, little keyboard in there.
Hi, this is John Zogby. Welcome to the sixth edition of our podcast, The Zogby Report, Real and Unrehearsed. Welcome to you. I'm in Miami, and this is the sixth week in a row of what is truly unrehearsed. We really don't know what each other are going to talk about, and I'm here again with my son, Jeremy. And hi, how you doing?
Not too bad. I'm in a studio right now, but I have to tell you that today by far is the coldest day that we've had here up in upstate New York. It's pretty bad.
That's what I hear, and I'm not missing it.
Well, we're missing you.
All right, well, that's good.
So let's kick this off. We're going to do something a little bit different. Normally, we start out with domestic, and we've been tracking the primaries. So the top story for today will be New Hampshire. Stay tuned, but we're going to start on the international front. Specifically, three hot spots. Number one is coming back into the surface. If you recall, back in 2019, Venezuela was a major hot spot. We jump back to last week when President Trump gave his State of the Union, and we talked about a little bit about that last week. But I did not mention that somebody made a big appearance at the State of the Union, and that was none other than Juan Guaido, who Trump, during the State of the Union, called president, has been calling him the president of Venezuela, along with the former advisor John Bolton and General Pompeo. Just to make clear, Guaido is not democratically elected, but he looks to be the guy for the White House. And the fact that, amidst a major developing story over the last month with Iran, that President Trump chose not to mention anything about Iran, but mentioned Guaido as the president of Venezuela. Well, I if I may forecast, and actually let me say first that there is an old Arab proverb that says, "He who predicts is a fool." And of course, the Zogbys are both Arab and in the business of being fools. So I would say to look out for Venezuela as another hotspot to come back into the news cycle. Moving on to hotspot number two is Iran. I mentioned last week that there hasn't been too much discussion about where anything stands between the two countries, the United States and Iran. But I do want to point out that here and there, the news has been reporting on an increased number of military personnel who have suffered severe brain injuries from Iran's retaliation following the assassination of General Soleimani. So we're at now, according to the news, above 100. And it's interesting that the White House has not made an official admission or statement on the fact that so many military personnel have suffered. So that's something that we will be watching in its development. And then, of course, the third major hotspot, by far the biggest news around the globe, is the continuing saga of what they're now calling COVID-19. And I just have to say, I've been following this for a few weeks. I've read everything that I can, and there are a lot of contradicting stories. But what has come out, by my estimation, as the most interesting was President Xi made a public announcement, an appearance in Beijing. He was wearing a mask, and there was a dual message that the Chinese will get over this, but to brace for perhaps a long, grim battle. But at the same time, the economic miracle known as China cannot and must not slow down. Its economy has to continue to grow. There has been a lot of speculation that the authorities, the Communist Party, have not been accurate in their reporting of the number of cases and deaths. I do suspect that could be the case because of so much of, you know, all eyes on China and its economic growth. And something like this could really bring it to a screeching halt if it hasn't already. Dad, anything that you want to add to those three hotspots?
Yeah, just a couple of quick comments. First of all, you left off on China and the COVID virus. You know, already reports that European automakers are having a very difficult time getting auto parts from China, and further signs of a slowdown in that very important global economy. Not only the manufacturing slowdown, but Chinese tourism is particularly lucrative for many countries across the globe, including the United States. The Chinese folks are not traveling and not spending the way that they have. The latest reports, I guess, at this moment, approaching 65,000 cases worldwide, just 5,000 new cases reported overnight. This, of course, is Friday, Valentine's Day, February 14th. And projections, as you pointed out, of perhaps this lasting into 2021, could portend a global economic slowdown, and obviously something we'd pay attention to. Regarding Maduro and Guaido, what's really intriguing there is the multiple message that we're getting. One is clear that the president very much wants to make socialism and its failure and dangers a campaign theme in 2020, and will try to portray, no matter who the nominee of the Democratic Party is, that the Democratic Party has been taken over by socialists, and to create, despite Bernie Sanders' best efforts to portray himself as a democratic socialist, Mr. Trump will try to portray the party as having been taken over by socialists, and that socialists are best represented by figures like Maduro and like Castro and Mao and Stalin and so on. The other thing to pay close attention to is how overt this is in backing the challenging president, who, as you pointed out, has not been elected. American intervention in Latin America has always been questionable and always been disliked throughout Latin America. So we are walking a tightrope here. Part of Mr. Trump's thinking here, I'm sure, is the fact that Southern Florida includes lots of very influential Venezuelans, an elite of Venezuelans, whose support could be really beneficial in a state that is always close and which Mr. Trump won in 2016. And so shall we move on to New Hampshire? The main event this week, politically anyway, was the New Hampshire primary that had a few non-surprises and a few big surprises, and at least two huge winners. Of course, the results, Bernie Sanders, as expected, won 26% of the vote. Good showing. 24% to the man who continues to surprise, and that's Pete Buttigieg, a very strong showing. And then a very strong showing as well from Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, who not only hit 20%, but got more votes than Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren combined. So for starters, that leaves Warren and Biden's future really in a bind here. Where do they go from here? Warren promises to stay on, but it's hard to see how she does that. She's not doing all that well in the next two states, Nevada and South Carolina. Biden, from the beginning, has always said South Carolina on February 29th is his firewall. And that's because he not only leads there handsomely, but because of the strong support that he's has always gotten and continues to get from African-American voters, who are about 60% of the total in South Carolina. The problem for Biden is it too late? Number one, South Carolina is still a few weeks away as other candidates build up some steam. And also that his bedrock support among African-American voters is starting to crumble a little bit. Not he's ahead, but challenging him, interestingly, for the black vote is Tom Steyer. And then to a small but interesting degree is Bernie Sanders.
So Joe Biden ended his campaign in New Hampshire to continue on to South Carolina in order to reinvigorate his campaign. So while he's prepping for South Carolina, what should he be doing on the ground?
Those are all very good questions. You know, what can he do is he can continue to round up support and bolster his support among African-American elected officials and prominent civic officials in South Carolina. There is a Black caucus in South Carolina where he has strong support. These people have been elected on the ground in the various districts, and many of them do support him. He needs them. Secondly, he continues to remind that he was Barack Obama's vice president. Obama, a hugely popular figure among African-American voters, among Democrats, period. But don't look to Barack Obama to endorse Joe Biden or to endorse anyone at this point. Doesn't make any sense. I would say that he needs black celebrities, but and he's going to try to get them to endorse, like Oprah Winfrey endorsed Barack Obama back 12 years ago. But the thing is that his showings were just so poor in Iowa and then New Hampshire that I'm not sure which celebrities would still come out for him.
Joe Biden can rely on his legacy as the vice president during the first African-American presidency, as well as his influence in passing the Affordable Health Care Act or legislation. But in 2020, in South Carolina, What can he do, or what accomplishments and policies can he point to boost the black vote, in particular, the 18 to 29 vote?
I think that's going to be very difficult under any circumstances. So I'm not dodging your question, because there's one overarching question to all of this. Black voters and white voters, Hispanic voters as well, who can beat Donald Trump? And with very poor showings in Iowa and New Hampshire, it's going to be very, very difficult for Joe Biden to answer that question favorably. That was the thing he was relying on, you know, for the last 9 months from when he announced in April, I'm the guy that polls say can defeat Donald Trump. And now he's losing that edge completely. In fact, to the point where Bernie Sanders now is seen by more voters, Mike Bloomberg seen by more voters, Democratic voters, as the person who can beat Donald Trump. So I'm not sure that there's anything that Biden can do policy-wise at this point.
So what else is on your radar in regards to the election season heating up and moving on to South Carolina? What else are you looking at?
There are two lanes in the Democratic Party. There always has been since the 1968. There's the progressive left lane, which has about half of the party and actually always has. And I think it's pretty clear from the vantage point of today, Bernie Sanders occupies that lane, and he may even win the enough delegates to win the nomination, even though that will really anger the other half of the party. But I think what we see is Bernie Sanders occupying that left lane smoothly into the Democratic convention in July in Milwaukee. Where things get muddied up is in the middle lane, the center establishment. And so now what you have is Pete Buttigieg, who's doing much better than expected, but will be challenged for being gay and married, being too young, and probably never having won with more than 7,000 or 8,000 votes in this little city. You have Amy Klobuchar. She did impressively and has won the last couple of debates outright. But she, if you look at the exit polls, she and Buttigieg are drawing from the same pool of voters, haven't shown that they're able to draw African-American voters or Latino voters at all, who are very important in the Democratic primaries coming up. And then possibly the biggest winner of all in New Hampshire is Mike Bloomberg, who is not doing anything really overtly in the early states. It doesn't really jump in per se until Super Tuesday. But Bloomberg now is in the running in national polls, is in second place in a few polls, and is the guy that everybody seems to be talking about. But he has a problem with African-American voters from when he was running for and became mayor of New York City. And so this center lane is going to be really problematic for the Dems.
We've already seen this week President Trump giving his nickname for Michael Bloomberg and something to the effect of a massive, a 5'4" mass of dead energy. And some have started to speculate or ask, what is President Trump going to nickname Mayor Pete? Now, you alluded to the fact that his sexual orientation can come up or is likely to come up in as the campaign heats up on the Democratic side. But do you really think that the president is going to bring up such a sensitive topic of Pete Buttigieg's sexual orientation? Isn't that likely to have extreme backlash?
I think that he will. We had Trump tweeting just overnight that he would vote for a gay man. That's what he said, to be president. I don't think that he would raise any controversy like that. And his record has been pretty clear in terms of gays and sexual orientation. But I think that these are the problems that even Buttigieg is hearing already in his own focus groups and in other research, that males, African-American males, older African-American females with reluctance to, you know, the traditional sexual orientation, traditional family values, family in quotes, that have expressed not even so much a problem with a gay president as someone who is married and gay. And so that, I mean, even if it's unspoken, that could be a problem for Pete Buttigieg, especially in a close battle like this.
Wow. Well, as always, we will continue to watch these events as they develop, and we will be back here next week for episode 7. In the meantime, please subscribe and share our podcast, The Zogby Report. You can find it on www.johnzogbystrategies.com. You can sign up for it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Please be sure to subscribe and share, and we'll see you next week for episode 7.